Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Our guest today is Sean Devlin, the founder of Nice News. Nice News is a five-minute daily newsletter full of exactly what it sounds like, positive news stories. They've been around for a little less than 3 years, and they already have over 750,000 subscribers. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I want to start with the Nice News team, because again, like I was just saying, you're not like just an indie newsletter writer just doing it on your own like so many people here are. You're more of like the business side of things, which is part of why I wanted to have you on. So tell me, like, first, what a day or a week in your life looks like, and then I want to hear about the rest of the team after that.
Yeah, definitely. So I will say, even though we're relatively large in terms of number of subscribers we have, we run pretty lean. So I'll start with what I focus on. Most of my focus has been more sales and partnerships. We actually recently brought on board a director of partnerships, Kenny, who's been fantastic thus far. So a lot of my time has actually been onboarding him, but soon I'll be able to shift a lot of my focus towards other initiatives. Other initiatives I envision being more focused on growth, just overall strategy for the newsletter, supporting the team, like launching new initiatives. We're constantly working on evolving our core daily email, but also scaling content that we're producing on web, social strategies, maybe doing a nice shop, et cetera. So there are always initiatives that I tend to be focusing my time on beyond kind of the daily production of the newsletter too.
So, okay. So the people, I think I'm taking this from an article that might be like almost a year old. So as far as I know, the team last fall was, besides you, a managing editor, an associate editor, a staff writer, campaign coordinator, and then four freelance curators. So 9 people, I think, including you. So now you've got this guy you were just talking about who came on. Is that the full team, or have people left? Have people, more people come on?
That's pretty much the full team. We also have our staff writer transitioned to an assistant editor role. And then we have another writer that came on board that's supporting with the daily edition. So for the most part, it's pretty consistent. That's still the core team that we have. So yeah, okay. Most of our team is focused on editorial.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. How has that grown? Like, were there like stages of growth where it was like, okay, it started, it was like you kind of managing business side and one writer, or, and then like, then you hired a couple more, et cetera. How was like, what were the stages of building the team?
Yeah. So when we first launched Nice News, I'll kind of get into the evolution of the email as well. But we started with, Natalie came on board. She came from People Magazine as our managing editor. And then she brought relatively quickly, actually before we launched the daily email, someone, Ali from People as well, to support. We realized it would be very difficult to execute this newsletter with just one person focused on editorial.
Every single day.
Even if we had freelance writers, it's a risk, in particular if people are out of the office, et cetera, with holidays. So it's helpful to have additional support just in general to execute what we're sending every single day, 7 days a week, but also if we need backups. So it started with 2 core people on the editorial team, and then we brought on board Rebecca as a staff writer that summer. So pretty quickly we had that core team of 3 individual, like full-time individuals focused on editorial. And now we're just starting to kind of continue to scale the editorial team.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we probably should, like you said, get into like the evolution of the newsletter and like what this daily email is before we go too deep into things. So I subscribed like a month or two ago when I started thinking about interviewing you. And the way I receive it, I don't know if you have like segments that, you know, different people receive it differently, but I get it every single day, including weekends. And then there's an extra edition on Friday. Is that across the board, or like, is there other sends?
Yeah. Yeah, that's across the board. We've evolved that a little bit where what you mentioned on Friday is our editor's pick send. So it's like a note from the editor, intro, and then a curated kind of list of content that all links to articles on our website. And then we've evolved the Sunday send a little bit. So at one point, we like framed the send as Mindful Morning. It was pretty different from the rest of the daily edition sends Monday through Saturday. Since then, it's now a little bit, it also differs from the Monday through Saturday send still, but it's more of a weekly roundup. So we like compile the top performing stories of the week. And it makes it a little bit easier also to schedule in advance. And then we have some other kind of fun sections that we test out. So we have a This Week in History section. We curate different products and like book recommendations, what to read, what to watch, what to listen to, and amongst a couple other sections that we've been testing out in that email. The core email has stayed largely the same, but is evolving. So we have, I say largely the same because we have the format of the intro text, three featured stories, in other news, and quote of the day. Those are all sections that we had at the very beginning and we still have now, and are just works with the format of our newsletter. But we've brought and like removed different sections from when we launched till now, and we'll continue to do that.
Yeah. Easy to take out one piece of the Jenga tower and put it somewhere else from day to day, week to week. Okay. I think one thing too we should touch on before we get too deep into it is like the fact that this comes out of an incubator, right? That you'd been working with. I think you were maybe on the founding team for 4 or 5 years. So this company is called Optimism now. Maybe it was called Like Mind and Inbox Lab at different times. So it's evolved a bit. But yeah, my understanding is it's like a media company incubator specifically for newsletters. I think there's like, I don't know, give or take a few, like a dozen products under the umbrella right now. But yeah, tell me, what is this company and like what were you doing there for the 4 or 5 years you were focused on that before starting Nice News?
Definitely. Yeah, it was like a crash course in email publishing and web publishing for me, starting there from the beginning, and it has evolved a good amount. So Optimism basically owns and operates a variety of email-focused and web-focused publications. From the beginning, it actually started with just one publication called The Discover, which is a travel email series. And it would send, it started this way, but it would send a micro travel guide every Monday to your inbox. And then from there, we launched a full-fledged travel publication. But we launched a ton of brands through Inbox Lab at the time. We launched like trivia brands, we launched quiz brands. Now some of the flagship brands are Interesting Facts, which is like a fact of the day brand, Inspiring Quotes, a quote of the day brand, Word Daily is a word of the day brand. So bringing a wide variety of content to the inbox, but also providing value in the inbox, but also creating a format that allows to drive traffic to web as well. So so it was like, I focused on a wide variety of areas, I'll say, at Optimism, and like touched on pretty much everything, but honed my focus more on kind of strategy and operations over time.
Okay. Yeah. The way you're describing this, and like, as I was looking at the website, I'm trying to compare it to like a older media, like a more traditional media company model. Right. And like what comes to mind is like in all these different brands you're describing, it's almost like the fun section of a newspaper, but like each subsection of that, whether it's like, not that you have a comics brand, but whether it's like comics, the crossword, Sudoku, like word of the day, whatever, it's like each one of those sections split into its own media brand that then is like, you know, has its own sponsored newsletter issues and its own like web ad revenue. Is that like a fair kind of, you know, newspaper model comparison?
Yeah, totally. It's funny that you think of it that way. I think a lot of times we'll reference like magazines or even social media accounts and like thinking about, I think it's helpful just even for listeners to think about, like if they're thinking about creating a newsletter, thinking through that lens of like, what is out there that has gained traction on another platform that doesn't currently exist or could maybe evolve into a format that really is digestible in as a newsletter. And that's a lot of times like how concepts came about for or through Optimism. And creating a format that works well in the inbox, but also like someone wants to engage with on a daily basis and sees value in.
What are like two or three of the most important things you learned there that have like really shaped how you operate maybe now in running Nice News that you wouldn't have known before then?
I mentioned it was a little bit of a crash course. I feel like I learned a lot, but something that really kind of like frames Nice News from the beginning was the importance, and Optimism leans into this, but the importance of design in product and having like thinking about design as not just a logo mark and word mark and color scheme, but like the entire experience within the inbox. And I think that a lot of newsletters could potentially learn from this, where they maybe think that content is truly only
words,
text, or maybe web words, or maybe images, if that. But I think design can really impact the experience of a subscriber and how they engage with that product and ultimately how that brand can scale. So from the beginning, I just learned a lot about branding and design through through optimism, a lot about growth, and we can talk more about growth too, but mm-hmm. like kind of like growth hacking tactics from the beginning and like testing out a wide variety of tactics to scale subscribers and share subscribers across brands too. And yeah, I mean, lots of other yeah, things well, too. It's hard to distill
we can,
it down.
We can but... dip back into it. So I want to, something yeah. about, I've been working on the newsletter that comes out tomorrow as we record this. I was working on that earlier this morning. And one thing I was thinking a lot about, because this, the guy I was talking for this also is like very, you know, email is a visual medium, as he said to me. And kind of the way I've been thinking of it and the way I think of it, like for Creator Spotlight, is it's about like, it's about visual texture. And I didn't use this metaphor in the newsletter because it was a little too convoluted. I couldn't figure out how to put it in writing, but I'm going to say it now. If you've ever been rock climbing, right? Just in like a rock climbing gym, you'll go and there's like the different difficulties of route. There's like V0 through V8 or whatever. And the V8 ones, sometimes they're just like these weird curved things where you're like, where the hell do I grab on there? Like, what, how do I climb up that? And then a V1 is like very clear handholds. And that's, I think, like newsletter design is about creating that V1 where like there's, you, it's just very clear and you're, you just instinctively go up, as opposed to when it's like, you know, these weird curving shapes where you're like, I don't know how to grab this. And then so you just don't engage with it. So that, like, that's kind of how I think of it, where it's like a visual scroll of text, but like you don't even have to, it's not about having like a graphic designer who's so good, etc. It's just about like tweaking colors or fonts or like text sizes. I don't know, no question, I'm kind of just getting on my soapbox about newsletter design, but I think that's something you guys do really well, where it's really quite simple, but it's just like it's about the details, right?
Yeah. And you know what to expect too. I think it's beyond the design, kind of the product itself is like the formatting of it, the sections. I think how people engage in the inbox, like sometimes they're not just going to open an email and just start to read a novel. Like they want to be able to skim through, or they want to like get a few tidbits here and there. So thinking through that lens is really helpful for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk about the kind of the origin story, the beginning. So to me, like when I forget how I came across you and how I came across Nice News, but I was like, what? Like, I was like, I don't get it. Like, good news isn't a topic. Like when I read news, like whether it's like, I live in New York, so I'll pull up like Eater New York, and it's like, I want to read news about the food restaurant scene in New York, or Gothamists. Like, I want to read locally reported news about New York. And it's like, I want to read the topic, and there's going to be good and bad news within that topic. Like, good news isn't a topic. But then thinking about it, I'm like, okay, I guess like the appeal of good news is like, I'm just thinking of somebody like in a movie or somebody who's like disheveled, they're like having a bad day, they're like, give me some good news, you know? And it's like something like that. So the, to me, it implies like the audience for this is like people who are despairing, people who are like consuming too many things and like want this as like a rest stop on the highway of in the desert or whatever. I'm mixing metaphors here, but I guess that's my question, is like, tell me how you came across this idea and like validated this idea that like good news could be an editorial beat in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you mentioned in terms of like the rest stop, initially the idea for Nice News kind of started to come about early 2021 during the peak of COVID, when I just found myself overwhelmed by the news cycle and like checking the New York Times app for every single day for COVID case counts. And I got to the point where I was just like, this isn't healthy. I'm like training myself to be looking for negative.
That actually makes so much sense.
Yeah. So I got to the point where I entirely disengaged with news, and through conversations with friends, family, I realized that a lot of people felt that same way, where it was sort of just like this sense of being overwhelmed by news to the point where you just get to the point where you entirely disengage because there's no alternative. And from my perspective, it's sort of like, why does it have to be that way? I feel like there have to be good news stories out there, or a way to like frame certain stories in a more positive light, to a point where we're not just like so overwhelmed that we have to not be aware of, as to like anything that's happening in the world. So that's where the idea came about. And I think lots of thoughts in terms of what you said, but I think it can definitely be like, if we're talking about a major news publication or like cable news channel, I think there's a potential for them to have like a good news segment or like an hour dedicated to positive news where people can engage with news that they deem to be positive, or a section of the website that's focused entirely on good news. I think that's definitely possible. I think part of the reason we launched Nice News is because there wasn't this sort of safe space to engage with news where you know that the content you're going to be reading is uplifting, relevant, uplifting. So that's where we initially came from. But also we realized that there's so many stories out there that were just being overshadowed by other headlines, where news sources were focusing like the greater majority of their coverage on like 2% of, I don't know the exact percentage, but like it felt like very little of what's actually happening in the world. So there was just this need to uncover these stories and then present that in a format that's easy to digest each day. And obviously, having been in the email world, of course, I naturally thought of newsletters as the first place to start.
Yeah, no, so that makes sense. When I was thinking about this last night, as I was researching too, I was like, I was like thinking myself into this corner. I was like, well, I guess it's like, because I'm like, how do you have good news without bad news? Because it's like, you know, joy and despair, two sides of the coin of life, right? Like, how do you, you can't have one without the other. But then I was like, my problem is I'm thinking about this in as if it were an island, where it's like, you know, you go on Twitter, there might be, there's accounts that just post like nice pictures of dogs, right? And it's like, that's all they post, nice pictures of dogs. But it's like, they exist within Twitter, so there's all this other stuff, so it's just like one thing. So I was like, yeah, I was grappling with this, like how does this make sense? But I was like, oh well, I guess it's like, it's not like this is the only news outlet. It's like people are consuming the other news things too, and then this is like, again, this rest stop that where it's like, I want to learn about something that's happened, but
exactly,
give me some good news.
Yeah, that's the goal, is not obviously replace these major news outlets. We're trying to provide a healthy alternative or supplement people's news consumption. So maybe they start their day with New York Times, but then after they read Nice News. And ultimately our mission with Nice News is to help filter people's lives for through a more optimistic lens. So I think it's difficult to do that when you start your day and you're reading really negative content and overwhelming content that translates into how you interact in the world. How you personally feel, and then how you interact with others.
So the relationship with other news outlets, do you know much about like how people who read Nice News, like how this sits within their broader media diets, or is it kind of just like what we're already talking about it, where it's like assumptions? But yeah, if you know anything about that, I would love to hear it.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact percentage, but it was the greater majority of people are reading Nice News because it's content that they're not seeing on other news sources. So we've leaned into that in terms of curation and like why we exist. And then also the greater majority of our subscribers are reading other news sources as well. It's not their only source of news, which I think makes a lot of sense.
No, absolutely. One other thing about like relationship with other outlets, I when I first saw it, I was like, I couldn't tell, like, is this an aggregator or is there original reporting, original writing? And now my impression is that it's a mix of both. At first I was like, is this an aggregator? Because I'm like, oh, I've heard this story before. Like, you know, I'm on the internet 14 hours a day. Like, I've seen this. But then there's something like, oh, this is like, you know, this person is being credited as having told Nice News, this quote. So I'm really interested. What's kind of the mix of original reporting versus kind of aggregation and like, you know, recycling stories?
Yeah, definitely. So for the daily email digest, the greater majority, it's aggregation. So original reporting will normally feature on our website, but also sometimes feature in featured stories and then link out to the website. Every Sunday edition, I'll say the featured story is original reporting and we'll link out to our website. But future state, I'd love to get to a position where we're doing a lot more of that reporting. But we realize where we're sitting right now that our core focus is more aggregation, in particular for the daily email series.
Picking what you aggregate or what to report on, besides like this is a positive story, what's the criteria that determines whether or not it's a good fit for Nice News specifically?
Yeah, great question. So pretty early on, we realized that there's a gray area. Like, it's not our subscribers, it's going to be impossible to please everyone. It's going to be impossible for every single person who's reading Nice News to consider every single story that we include in Nice News nice or positive news. So we, understanding that, we kind of tried to create a framework that allows us to understand, like, when something feels like, oh, this is perfect for, like, this is a nice new story, or maybe this doesn't actually fit. And I think we're asking ourselves certain questions, and by no means are we like currently asking ourselves all these questions for every piece that we're choosing, but we created the framework so that it kind of like is ingrained within the editorial team when they're curating. Questions like, does this piece of content make me feel more optimistic about the world? Like, does this piece of content help others feel more connected to each other, or more inspired, or more connected to the planet as a whole? And there are these set of questions that allow us to determine, like, ideally the great majority of our subscribers are going to consider this to be nice, and like, this is why they will consider it to be nice, and also why we want to include it in the daily email, because we think it can create a greater impact and is relevant for our subscribers to read.
That's really interesting. Like, my takeaway from that was that it's about, like, this is about relationships between people. Like, a nice new story is about, like, people interacting in a positive way, or people interacting with the world in a positive way. So I'd love to hear more about the curatorial program. So my understanding is you have like four, maybe freelance curators. I think they're somewhere on the other side of the world. And they are browsing like 100 different news sources every day. I would love to hear anything else you have to say about the curatorial program.
Yeah. So we implemented this relatively early on, and not necessarily with the intention of keeping it forever, but it's actually worked out really well, where we have four curators that are based in the Philippines. And based on the hours that they're working, they're basically sourcing content overnight for us, where our editorial team wakes up in the morning and then it's basically that initial filtering of news. So they have a list of publications that they're referencing in total across the four curators. It's around like maybe 100, 120 total outlets that they're referencing. And they will provide to us through Airtable a variety and submit stories for then our editorial team to then look through. So our editorial team is, of course, still looking at news stories, making sure that we're not missing anything. But it really is helpful to have that kind of initial database of content to select from, and then filter down further. And the editorial team is probably spending around like an hour and a half, like in addition to the meeting, determining what we're including in the daily email. So it saves time having that initial process through those curators.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, a second ago you were talking about, like, you know, it's about mitigating the, like, most of our subscribers will probably like this story, and that's part of what, you know, determines whether or not you pick one. I would love to hear more about the audience. So everything I know about the audience is, last time you said a number publicly, it was 750,000, and that it skewed female and older than average, but that you were more concerned with psychographics than demographics. I'd love to hear you speak more, like, about who this audience is, how you guys think about them.
Yeah, definitely. So currently we're at 820,000 subscribers. In terms of metrics, our open rate hovers around kind of mid to low 50s.
Very good for that size.
Yeah, I will say we also filter out a good number of people. So we have like a flow for cold subscribers, where if you haven't opened an email in a certain amount of time, you're going to get a dedicated email asking if you're still interested in receiving nice news. You're also going to get a section on the top of the daily edition that's going to request you to click if you still want to receive nice news. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with that approach, but we are pretty like adamant about having what we have a process in place to filter out people who are not engaging, because we want to maintain those numbers.
Yeah. 820 is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we've gone through kind of like waves of growth and then like waves of maintaining a similar number because of the fact that we're filtering out people. So yeah. And then in terms of click-through rate, we're a little over 4%. I mean, it depends on the email. Sometimes it'll be 3%, sometimes 5%. And then, yeah, in terms of demographics, we skew slightly older. 86% of our audience is over 35. And also skew slightly female. 68% of our audience is female, 32% male. And we have, like you said, psychographics is really important to us, because I don't think we're only targeting by any means like middle-aged women. I think it's just like we've been able to cultivate that audience a good amount. But I'll mention that to someone who is like a college-age guy, and he'll like be surprised. I'm like, oh, I would have no idea that that's your core audience. And I think our goal is obviously not to just like preach to a particular demographic in terms of psychographics. We're thinking about people who are obviously interested in positive content, potentially interested in health, wellness, like self-empowerment, interested in mental health, interested in, like we talked about, connection to others, interesting in like feeling more connected to others. I think a lot of our stories lean into that, or maybe the environment, like feeling connected to the planet, or maybe just to what we were talking about earlier, became fed up with news in general and wanted an alternative, so, or something to supplement their news source.
Yeah. Okay. So you were talking about the different topics you cover there, and I know you revamped the website earlier this year, and I took a look in the old Wayback Machine to see what had changed. Mm-hmm. And what instantly struck me was that the list of topics in the masthead had changed. Mm-hmm. So four changed, four stayed the same. I'll read them out. So the ones that stayed the same were culture, environment, science, and health. Though health used to also be health and wellness. So those stayed the same. The ones that changed were, the ones that left were acts of kindness, animals, everyday heroes, and innovation. In their place came in humanity, lifestyle, sports, and tech. And so what stood out to me was, it was like, okay, the ones that came in are more like traditional news categories, where the ones that left were these more like stylized, kind of cutesy takes that were like so pointedly on the nose, nice news. So yeah, I'd love to hear you talk about like why these things changed and why it was these specific topics.
Definitely. And I'll say the first set of categories that you referenced, we came up with before even like sending our first daily email. So
they've been around for like 2 years.
They had been around for a good amount of time. Yeah. So over time, we got a sense of like what our audience is engaging with, but also like what direction we want to take Nice News. And of course, the shift in categories is representative of kind of the direction we want to take it in the future. I'll say a lot of like through our initial research and also just like being familiar with other good news outlets that are out there, a lot of good news can kind of fall into two buckets. Like it's either very centered around maybe social impact or mm-hmm. focused on a particular demographic that tends to not be like super widespread. Or it's very feel good. Like you've seen, I'm sure, like social media accounts that are just posting videos that are really feel good and it can go viral. Or there are of course like human interest stories you could focus on that are really feel good. So we definitely cover those stories, both those stories, but we're trying to create a space that is seen as more of a flagship positive news platform that covers a wide variety of content that's both entertaining and informative and uplifting. So I think that the shift in categories is representative of that too.
That makes sense. I want to talk about social media. So you were just talking about like these, accounts on social media where these nice news stories can go viral. And I found there's at least three social media accounts Nice News has. One is the biggest one is Instagram. There's 183,000 followers, posts like two or three times per week. I don't know what the engagement is like. That's hidden. There's the Facebook page, which has 37,300 followers. And then I thought this was really funny, that there's a Twitter account, but it posts four times a day. There's 33,000 followers and almost always zero engagement. Each post though gets around 200, 300 views. But I thought I'm laughing because it's like, this is the antithesis of Twitter. Twitter is like the antithesis of nice news, of good news. Like that's like the point of, that's how I use Twitter. It's doom scrolling. So I thought that was just like so perfect. But I guess the question is like, tell me about Nice News's relationship with social media and like across these three channels. Yeah.
I would say it's a very difficult relationship. No, it's not a core focus of ours. I'll say it provides value, but it's definitely not a core focus of ours. We've been able to, and Instagram, as you mentioned, is the largest channel that we have. Initially, we were able to really scale that through leaning into what I mentioned, like viral videos we realized after a certain point that it wasn't really representative of like what we were doing in the inbox. It was just like trying to scale people to watch more positive content, which has positive impact, but it just didn't feel like it translated very well, like from social to web. Or
watching
email.
Like a video of like a puppy and a monkey playing on your, while you're looking at your phone is like so different than like reading an article. Yeah.
For sure. And there were some more substantive videos than that, I'll say. Yeah, but still
not like, to put you feel good.
Yeah, lots of puppies and monkeys. I will say that social hasn't, and even regardless as we were scaling that, it was very difficult to move people, like move followers from Instagram to these subscribers on our website. And I think that part of the reason maybe was because of the disparity there. But regardless, social has been, it's been helpful to some degree in that, like, it's helpful to have a number that someone can reference, in particular for sales and partnerships, where like we're partnering with a brand and they hear 800,000 subscribers, but they can't see that number. So maybe they look us up, they see our, it's validating. They see our, and also potentially we can do a collaboration and do it like multi-platform. We'll do something on social, also do something on web and email. So it's helpful to have, and we've leaned into it. But I will say we could definitely have a more defined strategy, not even just necessarily strategy, more of a focus there than we do right now. It's a little bit more kind of like in the background.
Doesn't seem like you really need it though, to be honest, right? Okay. So we should talk about growth. So you said you're at about 820,000 now. My understanding of how you've grown was kind of three things. One, it was cross-pollination with the other Optimism media products at the beginning. And then there's been giveaways and there's paid ads. So that's all I know. Tell me the growth story.
Definitely. Yeah. Those are three of the larger buckets, but I will say there are definitely more buckets too. For cross-pollination, that was one of our earliest tactics, and it's not as much of a core tactic currently, but it's helped us really scale to the point that we're at right now. And we've done a variety of approaches for cross-pollination in terms of introducing subscribers on other Optimism brands to Nice News, whether that's like finding ways to incorporate Nice News articles, linking out to Nice News, up converting those people to subscribe, or doing dedicated campaigns centered around Nice News and then getting subscribers through those means. In terms of, you mentioned giveaways. In terms of giveaways, we've done collaborative giveaways with a variety of newsletters and larger publications as well, where we'll share subscribers through a platform called Dojo Mojo. That's a little bit less. We go through waves with that. I would say like on average, maybe once a month. It's not like currently a massive growth channel of ours. And with the caveat that you really have to filter out those people. So you have to put them through a cold subscriber flow relatively quickly, because if they're not engaging, then you want them out because it can compromise deliverability. So it also works really well for newsletters that are more generic, and Nice News is pretty generic and can target a really wide audience. If you have a niche newsletter, I would definitely not recommend that. Facebook ad campaigns have been successful for us thus far. We're just starting really to scale that more and lean into that. And I see that as like more of a future growth channel of ours, in terms of it being like the majority of our subscribers are coming from that. But it's been successful. We've done, in terms of campaigns, we really lean into kind of the angle of that 1440 utilizes for like nonpartisan news or unbiased news, but more so like negative news versus positive news, and kind of creating that comparison, utilizing memes, utilizing visuals to be able to create that comparison. It's been successful thus far. And I think that I will say, in terms of conversions, it's always more successful when you are able to kind of present what it is that like Nice News is within that visual or within the text, rather than just like sparking interest through a viral meme and getting someone to click, but then they don't convert or they don't engage. So like trying to find that balance in terms of CPA, but also presenting what it is that you're actually offering to make sure that they understand what they're signing up for.
So I was looking at your Facebook ad library, and one that really struck me, which is very much this visualization, and there was like a couple dozen ads, but this was the only one with this exact visual and messaging. So it was like kind of a healthy, a delicious looking orange slice, and then a moldy orange slice. And the delicious one was obviously Nice News, and it said the benefits. And then the moldy orange slice was like, it was framed as TV news. And that TV news makes you negative, makes you stressed, and breeds pessimism, which I think what was on my mind when I saw that was like the audience skewing older. I was like, well, of course, like TV news viewership skews older and also skews more on Facebook. So it makes sense that this is a messaging. But it was like, I mean, that was like one ad unit of a couple dozen. But yeah, I just thought that was really interesting how you were framing it as an antidote to TV news in general.
Yeah, it's funny. I knew you were going to mention that ad. we reframed that ad actually a little bit where we decided not to like call out specific news sources because also we're sourcing from those. And it feels a little bit like we're not trying to attack anyone by any means. I think at one point we said like regular news or we said TV news. So I think TV news is maybe just a little bit shorter. So it's been performing better.
Well, yeah. But I think that is like,
I mean, it's understandable too.
Yeah. That's like a shorthand that many people use where it's like you watch news on TV and it's, oh, it's all bad, blah, blah, blah. It's bad, et cetera. Which to me, I only know that as a shorthand because I've like never watched TV news in my life, but it's like, I get what that means. Yeah. Right.
Totally. It's weird. It's understandable. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That approach has worked well in terms of comparison.
Yeah. So I guess like my other guess is it has to be a lot of word of mouth growth, right? Because I think Nice News in general, a lot of the stories on here seem like something that like 20 years ago, my aunt would have forwarded me. And it's like, I'm the 73rd email in a forwarding chain. So I have to imagine that kind of thing is happening a lot here. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. A good number of our subscribers have come from sharing, from forwarding emails or social sharing. I mean, we're trying to lean into that a little bit further and starting to kind of like test out campaigns, like referral campaigns, one-off referral campaigns to incentivize subscribers. But really, I will say that like, if your product isn't fantastic, like people aren't going to share it. So it's oftentimes also like certain stories that we feature. So a lot of the stories that we feature can spark emotion in our subscribers and be really like uplifting, obviously. So when they feel good and they feel really connected to the story, they're that much more likely to share it with someone.
That's all about human connection. Exactly. Is there like a specific type of story or like, I don't know if it, like if I'm looking at the masthead here, the culture, environment, health, humanity, lifestyle, science, sports, tech, like I don't know. Is there a specific like topic of story or like something deeper than topic that's like, you know, something like more of like a type of story? I don't know. What's most popular? What do people like the most?
Yeah. Honestly, it really does vary. I think there are times where we're like, all right, we know this story is going to perform really well. And then sometimes certain stories surprise us. It can be just like stories that people would deem as like more major news. It could be stories that are a little bit more feel good. A lot of health and wellness stories can do well.
Because it's like news. We'll have,
yeah, totally. It feels really applicable to them. They want to learn more. And oftentimes we're really just looking at clicks here. So we're seeing like when people want to click to learn more than what's included within the email or depending on the section, just click to learn anything. If it's like an odds and ends or in other news. But it does vary. I mean, we've had certain stories and like on the environment click exceptionally well and like culture as well.
Yeah. How about like not just about topics, but you know, testing all the different pieces of this, the design topics, you know, time you were sending, whatever. I'm curious about like the first 6 months scrap heap. Like what were some of the things that failed across any part of the business or the format of the newsletter? What was not working in those first 6 months?
Yeah. So in terms of A/B testing, like from the beginning, we were like A/B doing a 5-part subject line test, and we would get a sense of like what people were engaging with based on our subject lines. So like we would even test like the intro text. We would test all of the featured articles. We would like play with the formatting, et cetera. So we got a sense like just through engagement, what people were the most interested in pretty quickly, but we really didn't like, as I mentioned, like drastically adjust the format of the email because we wanted people to become accustomed to that format. So like we would test out a few different sections here and there, but we really were pretty consistent with the format of the email just because we wanted to like create that habit and like understanding of the subscriber as to what they should expect in their inbox. So it was a little bit more kind of like the content that we were testing, maybe on occasion, like CTAs or images if we weren't doing a subject line test.
That makes sense. Yeah. We haven't really talked much about monetization yet and like whether or not I have to imagine this seems certainly like a profitable enterprise to me, having that many subscribers and having had that like early boost to gain subscribers. I think you monetize through sponsored issues. Maybe there's some partnerships, some web ads. What's like the full range of what are the revenue streams for the business and like how, if you are profitable, can you share like how long you've been profitable?
Yeah, definitely. We are profitable. We became profitable in November of last year, but I will say that we scaled like from September of last year through this summer. We've more than doubled revenue just because we've been really focused on sales order. In particular, I've been focusing a lot
without increasing cost partnerships as well.
Significantly increasing cost. We brought on board the director of partnerships, but not drastically increasing costs. The greater majority of our revenue, like over 90% of our revenue, is generated in the inbox, which isn't surprising. That's our core product. And it's through partnerships with brands, of course. So we have that format that everyone's familiar with, the logo incorporation, the header, the primary sponsorship. Yeah. So we have a primary sponsorship under the first featured story. We added in our evolution that you referenced in March, a secondary sponsorship placement. So that's really helped us like monetize even further the daily email. And then sometimes we'll monetize products as well, like in the Something We Love section or odds and ends. But most of the time, like the greater majority of our revenue is from the primary and secondary sponsorship slots within the email, working directly with brands or working through agencies.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Is there like, I don't know, are there any like wild card revenue streams or like experiments that you are working on that you can share or like dreaming of doing in the next 6 months? I don't know, you know, something on the horizon.
Yeah. I'm trying to not complicate it for Kenny because he just came on board recently. But our core focus right now is to further monetize our email as like best we can. Obviously work more directly with brands and charge rates that are in line with the value that we're providing. And really in terms of our inventory, like we're already in a really good position. I think that like we can slowly increase our rates further. Like looking at Q4. But as we continue to kind of trend in that direction, we're also thinking about a little bit of kind of like the Newsette model in terms of like the types of stories that we could be producing for brands in collaboration with brands. Maybe there are brands that have certain like corporate social responsibility initiatives or just even initiatives that or angles that they're not sure that like what the story is there that we can kind of collaborate with them and create the story for them and bring it to light. And the goal there is to obviously have like corporations be doing more good in the world, but also to bring those initiatives to light and feel like we're showcasing those initiatives in a really unique way. So we've done that with a couple of brands, but I think we can lean into that even further and do like full-fledged pieces on it and featured stories when it feels like it's a good fit.
Mm-hmm. I would love like your advice on, I don't know, monetization and turning a newsletter into a sustainable business, maybe for two types of people. One for like early stage operators, like maybe like let's start there and then I'll get to the next question. But like, I don't know, you can't really start monetizing from zero unless you're like a famous person. But yeah, for like early stage operators, how should people be thinking about monetization?
Yeah, definitely. So I will say even for us, I mean, we didn't have a ton of resources early on, and early on, I wasn't focusing a lot of my efforts on like actually like doing outreach and direct sales. Mm-hmm. I shifted that focus last year. So there are resources out there. I mean, even thinking about like the Beehive Network, like there are networks out there. And beyond that, a lot of agencies that you can get in touch with that support with inventory, even if you have a smaller reach, if you're thinking about like CPC inventory in particular, probably more difficult if you're looking at like performance and CPA, but
which is what you
I think CPM still.
Yeah.
CPM. Yeah. Yeah. So, but still, I mean, if you have, as you start to scale, there's more opportunity for you to like get in front of those brands and ultimately create relationships and do something on a flat fee basis. Even if those flat fees are a little bit lower and charge a flat rate, I think it's definitely possible. Or there are other agencies that, in terms of streamlining the approach, if you don't have the bandwidth, there are agencies that can still sell for you on a flat rate. So like maybe you bring on board one or two agencies that really like prioritize your newsletter, so you're not having to spend all of your time on sales and partnerships, and that can help you like focus on other things that are important. So yeah, I mean, I would say like obviously focusing on monetizing the inbox is the most important. So figuring out what approach, if you're thinking about sales and partnerships in particular, I think depending on the newsletter, if it's more niche, I think a premium model probably would work better, where you have some sort of like trying to up convert people to pay. I think for Nice News, that just wasn't the angle that we decided to take. We don't want to kind of paywall positive news content. I think there still is an opportunity for it in the future, but where we're sitting right now, it's more partnerships with brands.
Yeah. This might be a strange question to answer, but like, what would you really not recommend? Like, what's not the way to build a sustainable newsletter business? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have like a clear answer to that, but what would you just like, do not do XYZ?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of getting at like the fact that there are a lot of newsletters out there, I'll say. And if you're launching a newsletter just to launch a newsletter, like make sure that you have like a defined direction and a distinct approach to your newsletter. And there are a lot of just like curation newsletters of my favorite things. And I think that there's value there if you maybe you have a great audience already and you're trying to bring those people over to email. Mm-hmm. But having a distinct direction, I think, is really important, and a core product that obviously resonates with an audience that people are coming back to and provides enough value for people to come back to every single day. I think it's easy to get caught up in like everything else we're talking about in terms of growth and monetization and like not be thinking about like your core product,
the actual product.
What it is that the value that you're providing and the reason that you're actually going to be able to scale and create a business out of your newsletter.
Yeah. This, I mean, that makes me think of the person you brought right before we started recording, one of the older creator spotlights, Haya Kehlani, who like, she has a curation newsletter. And again, like you said, everyone wants to do like, oh, here are the things I like. Let me, you know, tell you about, let me send you them in an email every week or whatever. But like hers works because it's about long form YouTube content. And like, you know, you go to the New York Times or Vulture or like any website and they'll have like, here are the 50 things you should stream on Netflix this week. Here are the 50 things you should stream on Hulu this week. Nobody is doing, here are the five things you should go watch on YouTube that are like long form things. So it's like she was watching those and it worked to start a newsletter about this because like people wanted to watch those and nobody was telling, like only the algorithm on YouTube was telling them what to watch. I guess I'm just reiterating your point, like only curate something if like you don't know of anybody else or like, you know, maybe not too many people also curating that thing. Like nobody needs another person curating like links from the New Yorker and New York Mag and your like Casey Lewis and Emily Sundberg, like this people doing this so well already. I don't know, off my soapbox now. I guess so. This is always kind of a tricky question, because nobody wants to put a ceiling on things, but I'm always curious like what people think, like what do you think the ceiling of this business is, maybe in terms of like, you could think of it through revenue or through audience growth. Maybe audience growth is like more of a easier way to put it. Like where can this audience top out? And again, I'll put like a qualifier on it. Like the thing evolves, you know, maybe you have it start like a video, et cetera. But like as a newsletter in the model it currently is, what is the upper limit of where this can grow, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we're looking to newsletters who have been able to reach mass market, not even necessarily mass market, but large scale already, like a 1440 with millions of subscribers. And we see that as like a definite possibility for Nice News. And they're continuing to scale. So I think that obviously by no means do they see like that they've reached their cap. So I think it's also important to like think about like reach on other platforms where like everyone has an email address and you see Instagram accounts that have like tens of millions, like hundreds of millions of followers. So it's like we are centered on like positive news, targeting a US audience or US and Canada audience. So like it's not global, but there are obviously like millions of people that we can reach that would be interested in Nice News. So I think that like the scale is however many people we're able to reach that are genuinely interested in Nice News in the US in Canada, or I mean, we have international subscribers as well, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to scale from there. I'll say that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay. Just a couple more questions. One, I wish I had a less punny word to use here, but what are you most optimistic about right now in the newsletter industry? Like, I guess maybe, or bullish would be maybe another way to put that.
I mean, I guess I'm bullish in that, like I mentioned, the potential for scale. I think that makes me excited, just like thinking about the fact that there are a lot of newsletters out there, and obviously some have gotten a lot of traction and scale, but there are a lot more that I think can further scale, and just like the opportunity for scale really excites me. I think it also excites me kind of to our earlier point in terms of like the types of newsletters that are out there. There are a lot of newsletters in like similar spaces, and like starting to explore different types of spaces, I think is a lot of fun. Like thinking about newsletters around lifestyle or style and clothing, thinking about newsletters around like home and garden, more newsletters around like health or wellness and games, like we were talking about. I think it feels like it still feels relatively untapped, and that excites me in that, like, there's so many different approaches that you can take for email as a medium to engage with content. And like email, I think will continue to evolve over time too, which is pretty exciting. So, lots of exciting things.
I think one way I think about it is like a lot of the more indie creators who are maybe like freelance journalists I talk to, who they make a little money from it, but it's like enough to pay their rent, like from their newsletter, but not a ton. I think of them and so many others as like just columnists on the newsletter internet, and like the newsletter internet being this like disparate thing where it's like, that's the point and the appeal is that it's distributed, but like that it's like for readers to like piece together their own like newspaper, as it were, in their inbox that comes to them as like columns every week or every day. And that's like, I don't know, I think within that and thinking of it in that framework is kind of what you're saying too, where it's like, what are the like open gaps in, you know, such and such newsletter subscribers newsletter in their inbox that like to create their newspaper, is like the place to look for opportunity. The other side of this question though is like, what gives you pause or worry? Like what keeps you up at night about, you know, working in this industry maybe?
I mean, in terms of pause or worry, and he was mentioned at like the newsletter conference, I can't remember who mentioned it, but it was like, there's not a newsletter bubble, but there's like a bad or a crappy newsletter bubble. I think it's more so like pause for people who are like, just think that they can do it because like there's opportunity in newsletters or aren't like fully committed to creating a product that's filling a gap, like we've been talking about. Yeah. I think pause or worry for me personally, there's still like in the back of my mind, like, why has there been no positive news platform that has gained mass market traction? Like in our initial surveys, like 81% of people weren't familiar with any positive news source. And the one that some people were familiar with, like 13%, was Upworthy, which is more kind of feel good content. So it's like, I think we're proof that obviously there's a market for it. There would be over 800,000 people that are reading and receiving nice news every morning. But still in the back of my mind, I'm like, are we going to be able to combat like this sort of inherent like negativity bias that we all like as humans like have? It's like we're trying to counter this like evolutionary bias that we have, and it's difficult. So I think there's still like in the back of my mind this sort of like concern that like, are we going to be able to succeed in our goal here?
I'm thinking the way you're talking about it, it's like, I think there's the desire to laugh, but there's like the need to cry, right? And like that's what you're that's what you're dealing with, is like people still need to cry, but it's like, I mean, that's like a dramatic way of putting it. But again, going back to what we were saying earlier, it's like, well, that's fine. There's plenty that's bad in the world and plenty of places to go see it. So it's like, as long as you can situate yourself, I'm looking right here at your about page, like you use the word safe space. It's a safe space to catch up on uplifting news. So it's like, again, that rest stop metaphor, that like that glass of water. I don't know. Anyways, I don't have any more questions. I think this is a great place to end it. So I guess if anyone is interested in catching up on some nice news, you can go to nicenews.com. Sean, thank you for joining. And this has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. And I will be here again next week. Thank you.